call the Senate Judiciary Committee order. It's about, looks like about 1:38 on Monday morning. Present with us, Senator Kelly, Senator Meyer, Senator Costello, Senator Wilkowski, and Chair McCaughill. Today we have two items on the calendar today. We have Senate Bill Number 6 dealing with issue of industrial hemp. And we have Senate Bill 55, which I'd like to bring up and explain to the committee on a new ACS. At this point, we do have a CS for the Senate bill. What I'd like to do is have Senator Costello bring it up as a version for us, and I'll have my staff come up and explain the changes.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill Number 6, Judiciary Version 30-LS0173-M before the committee for purposes of our working document.
All right. That's M, version M, so we'll have that, and I'll object so that we can hear the changes. And I have Jordan Schilling, staff to the committee, that will go through the changes, and then we'll get the sponsor. By the way, Senator Hughes is here in the audience, and she'll have her staff talk about the changes to us. All right, Mr. Schilling.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. I'd just like to briefly run through the four changes that this bill makes. First and most importantly, this new version removes the five-year sunset that was placed on the industrial hemp pilot program, and in its place it adds intent language encouraging the legislature to revisit the industrial hemp pilot program in 7 years. And it also requires that the Department of Natural Resources submit a report to the legislature each year, and I can talk about some of the items that will be in that report. The next large change can be found on page 5 of the bill, lines 24 and 25. And this is the part of the bill that prohibits the production of hash and hash oil or marijuana concentrates under this pilot program. There was a concern brought to us by the sponsor that those provisions might inadvertently prohibit the production of CBD oils. Mr. Chairman, that acronym means cannabidiol oil. I'm sure I mispronounced that. And I don't understand a whole lot about what CBDs are. I just understand that they don't have a psychoactive component. It's more for a medicinal type use. The next change can be found on page 6, lines 9 through 14. As you'll recall, the last CS that this committee adopted required someone transporting hemp to have their registration on their person while transporting it. And there was a request by the sponsor to allow that registration to be in digital form. We treat the requirement to have motor vehicle insurance, we allow an individual to have that in digital form, and so this makes kind of a commensurate provision that allows you to have your hemp registration in digital form as well. And then if we would like to look at the report, Mr. Chairman, that I referred to, it's on page 7 of the bill, lines 17 through 30. So according to the CS, this report will happen annually until the year 2024. And the report must include the total number, let's see here, of registered hemp producers, the number of violations that have occurred, and the number of stop orders that have been issued. It also includes the total amount of hemp that's grown each year, and also a summary of the economic effects of this pilot program.
Thank you, Mr. Schilling. Hopefully that will be a good news story. So I think that's what everybody's hoping, that this will increase the economic benefit of this. Are there questions at this point for Mr. Schilling, and then I can get the sponsors right up with it. Senator Wilkowski, you have a question.
Thank you. On the prohibition against using hemp for hashish. Looking at the definition of hashish in 1171-900, it means the dried, compressed, resinous product of the plant. And does that mean you can't dry the hemp or compress it?
Mr. Chairman, if you'd give me a moment to move to that statute. 1171-900?
Yes.
Can I get a brief at ease, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, let's take a moment to record. Mr. Schilling, you found it, and give us your best shot at it.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Again, for the record, Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. Senator Wilkowski, I think that it would not preclude someone from drying hashish. I think it's a combination of these things. It must be dried, must be compressed, and I think most importantly, must be the resinous part of the plant. I would add, too, that we have Sarah Chambers from the Marijuana Control Board that probably has a better understanding of the implications of using that definition.
If we could get some clarity on that, Mr. Chairman, I think that's important to get that hashed out.
Just be aware that Sarah, though I think she can come up, I don't know that she can answer that because she's been a stand-in administrator, probably not the policy person. And Sarah, why don't you come on? And I wanted to give you a little bit of an out there because you've been managing more than policy making. So please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Sarah Chambers, representing the Alcohol and Marijuana Control Board, and you are correct. The definition of hashish is actually found in the criminal code under AS 1171, which is not part of the Alcohol and Marijuana Code, and that is not my area of expertise, as I'm scrolling through this.
All right. Maybe we should get the criminal people that give us some explanation, but it looks to me like it's excluding cannabinol oil, however you say that. How do you say it?
I think it's
cannabinol. The things you learn here.
And Mr. Chairman, I also believe that the Department of Law Criminal Division is in the room.
We can excuse Sarah, and do we have somebody from the Department of Law? Sure we do. Come on up, put yourself on the record, and help us navigate through this question.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General in the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. I would concur with Mr. Schilling's reading of the definition. It is listed out as a list. It's dried, compressed, and resinous. So it would have to have those three qualities. So I don't think that that in itself prohibits.
The only people who are signed up.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that in itself prohibits somebody from drying hemp.
I think it's good to have it on record, Senator.
And maybe, if somebody can just clarify that. So the statute definition of hashish is dried, compressed, resinous product of the plant. So that wouldn't, us adopting that definition wouldn't inhibit the uses that we've heard in the testimony, for example, making the hempcrete or other using it for the paper or other various types of products. Is that?
And maybe just to add on to that question, the plant at this point, under this definition, is marijuana plant, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chairman, you are correct.
So I think it would have to fall under that. This is excluding one section so that there is no confusion between the marijuana and the hemp, if I understand correctly.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. Hemp is not marijuana under the provisions of the bill.
Okay. Senator Wilkowski?
It's cannabis, though, isn't it?
The Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't know that there is a statutory definition of cannabis, so that may be a agricultural.
But because, if I could, Mr. Chair, the definition under 1171-900, 10, I guess, says hashish means the dried, compressed, resinous product of the plant genus cannabis. So if it's in the genus cannabis, and you, I just want to make sure this is a clear record. So that nobody's getting arrested and nobody's going to jail for drying their hemp, which I assume you probably would have to do, or compress it in order to make just about anything out of it. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, hashish in the criminal code has a specific meaning, and it is the way it's made, it's intended to concentrate THC. For a psychoactive effect. I don't think that we can get there with just making paper as you have described.
Okay.
Senator Wilikowski?
We are adopting the definition of hashish from the criminal code for this bill. And in the criminal code, it defines hashish to mean the dried, compressed, resinous product of the plant genus cannabis. The way I read that is that if you dry or compress this hemp, then potentially you are violating the law, but you're saying otherwise as a representative of the Department of Law.
Through the chair, Senator Wilikowski, I don't believe that's the intent. I understand your reading of the law. If you think that there may need to be some clarifying language, then we could think about doing that. But I don't think that anyone's going to be prosecuted for making paper out of industrial hemp.
Senator Kelly.
Senator Wilikowski, I don't have the
put your microphone statute in front of you.
I don't have the statute in front of me, but is it the dried, compressed, resonance product? Hemp is not a resonance product. That's hashish oil, which is the resonance product. But it's dried and compressed. You can do that, but it's the resonance product that is defined there, I think.
I'll read it. It says hashish, in quotes, means the dried, comma, compressed, comma, resinous product of the plant, parentheses, genesis, close parentheses, cannabis. So I assume it means dried and compressed and resinous.
Resinous product.
Yeah. Yes.
So I think there's this, I think he brings up a point. You're adopting that, which kind of doesn't apply to hemp because hemp doesn't have a resinous product. Because
I don't know the answer to that.
The third comma, from the second comma to the end.
Senator, the other question probably more salient, and I don't know that we can get the answer exactly right now, but whether or not hemp is called genus cannabis, I just don't know the answer to that. And maybe the sponsor may have better knowledge for that than we have, but I think that would be a key element in that definition. And so Ms. Schroeder, if maybe make way for the sponsor, and we'll see if we can get that answer to move this thing on so that we don't confuse. And I don't think there is any confusion. It's just we got to make it very clear should somebody make a lawsuit. So. Put yourself on the record, buddy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Shelley Hughes.
The question is on this definition, is hemp known as the same thing as defined as genus cannabis?
Chair Cockhill, according to, as I read the statute and as I've talked to others, just leaving it open as anything referencing cannabis, then industrial hemp, since it does come from the plant cannabis, would be included in that definition. However, in the bill that the sponsor is proposing here before you, we've defined industrial hemp as the plant cannabis with 0.3% THC or less.
Got it. Okay. That helps me. So, Senator Wilcox, so what you're saying, the statute that we're being asked to adopt says industrial hemp produced under registration under this section may not be used to produce hashish. And then it adopts the definition of hashish in 1171-900. You go to 1171-900, it says
number 10, hashish means the dried, compressed, resinous product of the plant genus cannabis. Is it possible to have a dried, compressed, resinous product of hemp?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, there is a possibility of having a dried, compressed, resinous product of industrial hemp. However, the sponsor of the bill was concerned about not excluding the known non psychoaddictive portion of the plant that is used in commercial products, CBD oil. So once the sponsor requested that CBD oil be removed from the definition of hashish, the sponsor was satisfied that got us to where we were trying to be. Mm-hmm. However, that was the only concern. There were no other concerns. In other words, there are three things that are required in order to fit the description of hashish: dried, compressed, and resinous. The other items that are made out of industrial hemp would not be considered resinous. And exploring and talking to as many people as we could possibly think of about this definition, you would not consider the product after it's dried and mixed with other things in order to produce, say, hempcrete, would not be considered resinous. Also, in speaking with the Department of Law, as was said earlier, the Department of Law did not think that there would be enough to prosecute someone who is clearly not trying to produce something that was psychoactive. I hope that answers your question. I think I went all around it rather than get to it. But in other words, there are three things that have to happen, and the only thing that can be gained from industrial hemp that would meet those three criteria would be CBD oil, and we've now excluded that from it.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Thank you very much. Other questions? We have some public testimony I'd like to get to. We have some folks in Fairbanks and some folks. We actually have the Division of Agriculture online for questions, so if you want to go through the questions. We also have the Plant Material Center Manager, Rob Carter, online, and the Arthur Keyes from the Division of Agriculture is online. Probably the one now looks like been holding on the longest is Frank Turney out of Fairbanks. So let's go to Fairbanks. Frank Turney, put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Hello, Frank Turney. Can you hear me clearly?
Very well. Thank you.
Yeah, Senator Cargill on Judiciary Committee, regarding Senator Hughes' SB6, I'm aware of the definitions, difference between cannabis sativa C and for medical and recreational, and cannabis sativa L for production of industrial hemp. I'm glad to see the CBD oils are not including that definition of hashish. I just heard some remarks that you can't smash the hemp, the 0.3 down to make hashish is really far-fetched. Anyway, after reading some of the regulations, Senator, some are necessary and others I question. I hope the intent is not to regulate this hemp plant to death so it will be more difficult for farmers to invest and grow hemp and those that want to be employed in the hemp industry. As you know, my dream for years, as you know, Senator Cargill, that one day we will have Alaska-made hemp products on our shelves versus imports. 25,000 products can be made from hemp fiber and oils. And, you know, I really believe, after doing my own study, anything oil can do, I think hemp can do much better, and it does not pollute. And I have no problem with the Department of Natural Resources and adopt regulations. How much? I question that. I question that also, and I will put some other of these other questions on paper. But I would like to point out that I noticed that the industrial hemp, looking at the federals, they still have cannabis Sativa L still on with the scheduled drug with heroin and cocaine, and I know there's bills that have already been submitted to Congress to remove them. And, you know, when I look at the Constitution, I don't understand it. I always go to the Federalist Papers. And I don't have the number here in front of me, but if you look at the Federalist Papers, when it comes to agriculture, it's up to the states, not the federal government, to interfere whatsoever. So I'm glad to see that that also the industrial hemp that we recognize is in agriculture in the state of Alaska. Well, there's a lot of more things that I could add to this, but I would like to see this bill pass. And when you mention the word pilot project, maybe somebody can really give me a little more what you're talking about. Are you going to talk, let farmers have a pilot project and then need German later to see whether this is going to be successful? Or are you going to just let some of the universities do pilot projects? I hope not. I know that was mentioned, Representative Steve Thompson was working on a number of years ago, and the university up there wanted to start doing it, but they had trouble getting the seeds from Canada, and that's another problem. When I was down visiting my son, I went through Tennessee, and I know the farmers had difficulty in getting seeds to grow it. What happened is the federal government, you know, there's a time limit when you can grow. When you're growing agriculture, evidently they didn't see the sent the seeds far ahead of time, and they had a poor harvest of hemp. But I think if they would have sent the seeds in a timely manner, I think they would have been successful having quite a few hemp in the state of Tennessee. But anyway, I know that this is a good, clean, renewable fuel source also. And I always try to put this out to everybody, Senator. If you want to really know some real good facts in history, just go to hemp. Thank you, and I'll let others get on the air. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate your time and attention and input. We're going to go to Nancy Hillstrand at Cold Point Seafoods in Ketchumack.
Hello. My name is Nancy Hillstrand, and I support this bill. I have a seafood processing plant, and we buy quite a number of van loads of corrugated paper, and we get 100% post-consumer waste paper, so I have to get it all the way from Ohio. And if we could grow that here in Alaska, I believe we could start to make some corrugated paper because of the long fibers that it creates, and even mix it with some of our waste paper instead of having to send it all the way down to the lower 48. Industrial hemp is completely different than marijuana. It decreases land use, its fast growth rate, improves soil health, naturally resistant to pests. It was used in Chernobyl because it's as a soil phytoremediation product, which is kind of interesting. We use that in some of the places in Alaska. And it's also, the plant is carbon negative, so it absorbs CO2. It needs half the water and half the land as cotton, and is 10 times stronger than cotton. So the seeds also are a superfood, high in omega-3s, and it's a complete protein. So this is a durable, sustainable, recyclable paper and pulp, and I definitely think that this would be a great thing for the state of Alaska to use and be able to make products with. So thank you very much. I really appreciate you taking this up.
Thank you, Nancy. Thanks for taking the time to call in. We're going to go then now to Talkeetna, to Amber Haynes.
Hi, my name is Amber Haynes, and I live here outside of Talkeetna. And thank you for hearing SB 6 again and giving an ag hemp industry a chance in Alaska. I really appreciate this current version of this version N. Thank you for removing that sunset clause. And I did have a little bit of input in reference to the questions regarding the genus and resin and such of hemp. Hemp is indeed of the genus Cannabis sativa L. And there are cannabis plants that are grown for CBD. These plants fall under the federal definition of being less than 1% THC, but they are grown for high resin CBD. And this CBD is what's used to counter the effects of seizures, of pain, but this is not the traditional thought of CBD that is available at most health food stores and such. That specific CBD, I put in quotation marks, that is used using the whole entire hemp plant, whereas high resin CBD is made from the flowers of the cannabis plant, but that, again, it does have less than 0.1% THC. So that is a little confusing, but I don't know, you know, with the current language that CBD is made from high resin hemp plants. So I wanted to reiterate that. And then also, I just for a little clarification, the current language in the bill just uses the broad term of hemp seeds, and I'm not sure of the intent, but I did research on Colorado, and their current hemp bill does have a section that says nothing in this article limits or precludes the exportation of industrial hemp in accordance with the Federal Controlled Substance Act as amended. And, you know, this would be specifically speaking of hemp seeds that are non-viable, not fertilizable, you know, not able to be grown, that I just wanted to make sure there wasn't any kind of language that would somehow cause questions regarding hemp seeds that are non-viable. And I do hope that the pilot programs allow opportunities for persons with small acreage to grow for their livestock and family and personal use, such as myself and my husband, and that there's allowing sourcing of seeds for specific uses, such as, you know, growing for livestock feed, growing for fiber, growing for oil specifically, that, you know, farmers and those growing will be able to find the best seeds for their microclimates. And I just, again, want to say thank you for continuing to get this bill through, and I definitely support SB6 and this current version M. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Amber. Appreciate you taking the time to testify. It sounds like you have followed this thing very closely. Thank you. We're going to go to Kenai. We have Steve Albers in Kenai who is willing to testify. Steve, put yourself on record and your affiliation, please.
Yes, I'm Steve Albers. I work as a chairman of the board for a local soil and water. I want to point out I'm representing myself. That's an agency, but since I have not talked with our other board members, I'm not committing to their representation. I'd like to say that for the state of Alaska to promote hemp production for agricultural products is going to benefit our state in more ways than I can envision. There are re-diminution with oil industry. There's the potential for it as forage for crops. It grows very viable in an Arctic environment, although we don't have any proven results of that. It grows very well in Canada. It has possibilities for forage and for hay for people for increasing their acreage for their animals. Agriculture is of utmost importance in our economy, especially as it stands, in the fact that if we have more available people working in this industry, it will support itself. It multiplies itself. I believe that the Division of Agriculture is the right agency to work with agricultural products such as hemp, and I believe with the legislature as it sits, the 3.1% THC level when marijuana is an industry differently. It starts at about 15%. I believe the issue is that it is an agricultural product, and that by promoting it as an agricultural product across the state, it will benefit many industries. I don't want to elaborate on it other than to support your clear acceptance of this. The one other fact that I think is important to point out is that with the Division of Ag working with the Farm Agency as closely as they do and the Plant Material Center, I believe that they are best suited to regulate any type of penalties or anything else. I see some notes in here about the other enforcement potentials. And I believe that there is such a difference in the hemp industry to the marijuana industry that I personally don't believe that there's going to be any problems with regulating its product and the products that it can produce. So I'd just like to reiterate that I'm glad that there is such open, transparent attention to this product and to this enormous industry that can benefit us literally as soon as the plants are in the ground. Thank you for your time, sirs.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for taking the time to come out and testify on this bill. Good input. We're going to go to Anchorage now to Jack Bennett, who looks like he's with the Industrial Hemp Manufacturing LLC. Jack, put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon. Jack Bennett with Industrial Hemp Manufacturing LLC through the chair, Senator Coghill. We have $30 million worth of equipment, the ability to process 40 million pounds of industrial hemp annually and expand to 80 million pounds annually. We service oil well companies throughout the world, and we'd like to open up here in Alaska. The state of Oklahoma last summer purchased 100 million pounds of hemp for a 7-year contract for their oil reclamation technology. All of our fiber is totally sold out to the automotive partner. To manufacture American automobiles with biocomposites, hemp plastic, stronger than fiber. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter how green the product is. We're here to make money. And at the end of the day, we provide a replacement to formaldehyde-based fiberglass to the automotive industry. A car part that's corrosion resistant at the end of the life cycle of the car. The ingredients are 100% biodegradable. They go into manufacturing the new components of the new car. Alaska, the average age for an Alaskan farmer is 57 years old. And it's a growing fleet in addition to our fishing industries. Industrial hemp can revitalize young Alaskan farmers. The potential is the sky's the limit. A $30,000 investment on 16 acres, there's a model in Oregon, has a retail value in a 100-day harvest of $300,000. That particular farmer is my little brother in Oregon. And for him exceeding 0.3% tetrahydrocannabinols, he lost his crop to the state. There was no support systems in place to appeal, to say, let's retest this crop. After 2 months of appealing, finally allowed to retest the crop, and it came well below that. But by that time, the crop already rotted in the field. And we've been advocating to raise this number, or at least have a support system in place where the farmer doesn't have the crops destroyed. Advocate to raise that 0.3%. to 1%, while the MJ farmer that lives down the street, the marijuana farmer, has 20% THC and just to hang on to their crop. I'm afraid that the powers should go to the Division of Ag as a source of income, a new stream of revenue for the seed source, and should be separate from public safety, Department of Public Safety, and all due respect to them and to the Marijuana Control Board, should be separate. That money, the Division of Ag has the brains, the technology, the infrastructure to help this industry grow. So thank you for letting me share. I'm subject to your questions.
Thank you, Jack. Appreciate it. And you're right, the Division of Ag, by the way, they're on the line here, so if any of the Senate members of the committee have a question. Anybody in the room that want to testify? Nobody signed up.
Through the chair, Senator Cockfield, may I make a last thought?
You got a couple?
It's okay.
You can take the next 30 seconds.
There's plenty of grants. U.S. Department of Commerce, to fund manufacturing, to supply sustainable homes and the sustainable building industry with hemp insulation is a $200 billion market worldwide. But it's my fear that if this was attached to marijuana, it would restrict the farmer from accessing multi-million dollar grants to get their industry jump started. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jack. What I'm going to do at this point is I'm going to close public testimony then. And if there's questions for the sponsor of the bill at this point, what I'd like to do is move this up to the next committee referral, if at all possible. I think, but if there's any questions for the sponsor, the Division of Ag, I've got two members on, Rob Carter and Arthur Keyes. Make a motion.
Actually, I had a comment first. And I know the sponsor, and so I'm hoping it would be something she would support. But I'm not interested in another written report sitting on a shelf. And so on page 7, line 18, we require a written report. And I would either suggest we strike written or put in an electronic. Perhaps striking the word written would be.
Sorry, we're going to print it on hemp paper.
And I don't know that when we require a written report, if it can be done electronically only or not. I do not know the answer to that. So written probably would stand as a paper report, which we have many, many agencies reporting. At this point, I would probably stick with a written report, only because if I amend the bill, I may have to hold over for another day or so. You want to follow the bill with that, follow the bill with it. It's got a long ways to go before it gets through the other body.
Mr. Chair, I did not make a motion, and so the sponsor's here, and she heard my comments, so I think that's good.
Well, I think that we've put as clean a firewall as we can between the marijuana industry and this, which is a federally regulated issue that kind of came to our attention, so we're trying to do it as clean as we could. I'd entertain a motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill Number 6, Judiciary Version 30-LS0173/M from committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Any objection to moving this bill on to the next committee referral? It does carry a $25,000 fiscal note, $2,500 fiscal note, I think, not $1,000.
Yeah, it is that.
It will require approximately $25,000, yes. That will give the Finance Committee something to work on. Without any objection, then, with the fiscal note and the new CS, the bill will pass from committee to the next committee referral. We'll take a brief at ease. We'll sign this document and move it on. The Judiciary Committee back to order. Next thing on the list of things to do is to take up Senate Bill 55, which is the really the technical changes to the Omnibus Crime Corrections Bill. There are a couple of changes, so I'll have a new CS. And what we can do, why don't we make a motion to adopt that, Senator Costello, and then we'll just have Jordan Schilling, the staff to the committee, go through the changes.
I move CS for Senate Bill Number 55, Judiciary, Version 30-LS0119/N, before the committee as a working draft.
And I'll object. Try to remind me to remove my objection along the way. But Mr. Schilling, staff to the committee, there was a few changes in here from our original last draft, so why don't you go through those changes with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jordan Schilling, staff to Senator Coghill. So yes, there were there are a few technical revisions that have been added to this CS since the last time we heard the bill. A number of agencies came forward and said, hey, you know, we've got a few more technical things that would fit nicely in Senate Bill 55. So while not necessarily recommended by the commission, they're purely technical and help smooth out some of the implementation issues, even some of the drafting errors that were made last year. So the first addition to this committee substitute can be found in Section 4. So what this does is it amends the misdemeanor drug possession statute. And if you'll recall, with Senate Bill 91, Senate Bill 91 made simple possession of controlled substances a Class A misdemeanor, but it didn't make all forms of possession a misdemeanor. And so, for example, Senate Bill 91 did not repeal the statute that makes it a felony to essentially recklessly possess drugs around schools or on a school bus or near a youth center. And so, unfortunately, though, the statute doesn't accommodate for the fact that we didn't reduce that to a misdemeanor. So in our misdemeanor sentencing statute, we need to reference the two forms of felony possession. And so that's all this section does, is it just cites statutes that probably should have been cited in last year's Senate Bill 91 and just were oversights.
Question for that, Senator Wilkowski?
Yeah, just we're on the topic of hashish. What is the penalty for hashish possession?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. So hashish is a Schedule 3A controlled substance, and so possession would be an A misdemeanor, but distribution or manufacturing a Schedule 3A drug, if you're distributing or selling more than 2.5 grams, I believe it's a B felony, and if it's less than 2.5 grams, it's a C felony. So all forms of distributing or making hashish are a felony. That does conflict with the voter initiative that was passed and the language in Title 17, although I don't think that the Department of Law is pursuing prosecutions. But of course, Department of Law is in the room if they wanted to comment on that.
We'll go through the changes first. If you want to pursue it, Senator, let me know. Thanks. We'll pursue the continue on, Jordan.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. The next addition to the technical revision bill is in Section 7 of the CS. And so this change is necessary to bring the suspended entry of judgment, the SEJ, to closer alignment with the suspended imposition of sentence, SIS. And so current statute says that if you've been ordered to pay restitution in an SIS, that requirement doesn't somehow go away once you've completed the requirements of your SIS. Well, when we created the suspended entry of judgment in Senate Bill 91, we should have probably referenced SEJ in the statute. We should have stipulated that if you have been ordered to pay restitution and you complete your SEJ, that order doesn't disappear. And so this change simply says that a restitution order is not discharged and remains enforceable when a proceeding has been dismissed under an SEJ.
Okay.
The next change, Mr. Chairman, can be found in Section 9. What this does is it clarifies that a person who has successfully completed probation and the requirements of an SEJ is not convicted of a crime. And so, again, the SEJ is supposed to mirror the SIS to a large extent. There are a few differences between SIS and SEJ. And one of the major differences between the two is SEJ was intended to not appear in court view and was supposed to allow an individual to legally, factually say on an employment application that they have not been convicted. And so there's been some question about that, and what the CS does is it makes it crystal clear that an individual whose proceeding has been discharged under an SEJ has not been convicted of a crime.
Okay.
Section 12 and 13, Mr. Chairman, both do the same thing. These are statutes that require certain information be given to the respondent of a protective order. And the statute requires certain information be on this form, and one of the things that this form says is it lines out what the potential penalties are for violating a protective order. And so one of the penalties could, of course, be up to a year in prison for violating a protective order. It's a Class A misdemeanor with a maximum that could go up to 1 year. And this form that we give the petitioner, the respondent, currently says under law that the fine that can be imposed is a maximum of $10,000. Well, if you'll recall, in Senate Bill 91, we made the maximum allowable fine for an A misdemeanor go all the way up to $25,000. We moved from $10,000 to $25,000. And so we should have probably made this change. However, the Senate Bill 91 moved from $10,000 to a $25,000 maximum fine for an A misdemeanor through a House floor amendment. So I don't think that there was really the time to analyze the implications of that amendment on other parts of the statute, but this is just an important cleanup item that allows the respondent to know that they could be fined up to $25,000 if they violate it.
Okay.
Section 16, Mr. Chairman, includes one more offense to Health and Social Services statutes pertaining to the Alcohol Safety Action Program. This is the section of law that lines out who can be referred to the ASAP program and who ASAP can accept. And so, as we mentioned in the bill's last hearing, there was a bill last year, Senate Bill 165, that made revisions to Title IV, the alcohol title. And the two bills passed around the same time, and Senate Bill 165 allows for certain juvenile offenders to go to the ASAP program, and if they successfully complete it, it can reduce the fine. And while the commission recommended that we update these statutes, the commission actually did miss one offense that should also be listed in the statute, and that offense is access of persons under the age of 21 to licensed premises. So this just, in short, adds an offense that ASAP can be referred to and accept.
No questions? Move on.
And then Section 17 deletes a statute that we were inadvertently repealing in the last CS. It was really just an error on my part, frankly, Mr. Chairman. I requested something that shouldn't have been in the bill, and so now we've removed the repealing of that statute. And those are the only changes that the CS makes.
We do have Tony Piper with the Alaska Division of Behavioral Health. ASAP manager. We have Quinlan Steiner online, and we have Jeff Edwards from the Parole Board as Executive Director online if there are questions. Probably because I have worked with this bill so much, I am fairly familiar with it, but does the committee at this point feel comfortable enough to move it on, or do you want to hold it for another hearing yet? I'm open to discussion. Senator Meyer.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman. My question was, I know there was a concern about the fiscal note would grow with these changes, but I don't have a copy of the fiscal note. Is there, did I just not?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the fiscal note is not included in the members' packets. It's our understanding that well, first, the bill has received zero fiscal notes, but it's our understanding that these changes we're making will not increase the fiscal impact on the Department of Corrections.
Do you want to wait for a fiscal note on that, on these?
No.
Remove it?
No. That's fine, Mr. Chairman.
Is there any other questions?
I would add, Mr. Chairman, that this bill next goes to the Finance Committee.
Okay. Senator Costello?
Mr. Chair, I move CS for Senate Bill Number 55, Judiciary, Version 30-LS0119/November from committee with individual committee recommendations.
Any objection to moving the bill to the next committee referral? Seeing none, the bill is moved. I've removed my objection to the adoption of the committee.
At least you remember.
I know the records struggle with me. So with that, we'll adjourn at, looks like, 2:30.